interested. Nice to see your smiling faces this morning. The members in attendance this morning are Senator Ray, Senator Vic Fisher, Senator DeVries, Senator Abood Chair, and we have also, I've invited the House members of the State Affairs, so that perhaps we can, they have a, this will go to them, it will go to the State Affairs in the House, so they'll have a very excellent working knowledge, hopefully, by the time it gets over there, which won't be too long from now. I note there is with me also the Chairman of State Affairs on the House side, Representative Hurley. I also see Representative Miller, Juno. Are we still going to go on that? Juno Miller? Okay. Representative Jenkins. Representative Euling is here as an observer. Have I missed any of the representatives? I guess not. And at the end of the table are Mr. Gross, Av Gross, and Susan Burke, our counsel that's been working with us during the interim period. We've been working and meeting together with the council since the last session. We've had many meetings on this in Anchorage to draft a comprehensive revision of the campaign laws of the state. The purpose of this meeting today is an informal briefing by council on the work draft. This is a new work draft, the latest work draft we have. All the rest of the work drafts, if you've got any of them, get rid of them, because you'll be talking, you won't be reading from the same sheet of music as we are. This committee will meet again on Monday at 9 o'clock. It'll be a work session to take up a few of the items that have not been discussed prior to this. As you well know, it's very difficult with during the interim period to get a full committee together all at once, because they're all involved in other projects and other meetings. It is the intent of the chair, with the concurrence of the chairman, or rather of the members of the Senate on the committee, to adopt this work draft on Monday. That's my hope, it's my intent, and that's certainly my hope, with, as I said, with the concurrence. I note that Senator Kelly has joined us. He's a member of the State Affairs Committee. And with that, I would like to turn, please, I would ask you to go through the chair, if you would, please. Any questions after we get through, I'd like to have Av and Susan give us this report, and we can then open it up to some type of questioning, if you wish. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Gross.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many of the members of the committee have been with us all the period of the interim, so a lot of this will be redundant to them, but for those who have either not been there at all or missed or picked up one or two meetings, this may help you to know where we are. As you remember, we had a series of meetings with the committee last spring, and basically discussed ideas about amending the campaign disclosure laws in concept only, and got a number of ideas and suggestions from various members of the committee, some sort of consensus with the recognition that no one was committing themselves to vote for anything, but at least a general consensus of ideas and how we should proceed. Susan and I then took the existing campaign disclosure laws, the legal decisions that had been reached, the Attorney General's opinions, the previous work which had been done by this committee, for this committee, when it was chaired by Senator Fisher, and also for Senator Ray's Judiciary Committee. There have been reports compiled for both of those committees. Took all those and redrafted the campaign disclosure laws in toto. The idea was to simplify them, to bring them up, to make them consistent with existing court decision over 10 years, and hopefully to reflect what had worked and not worked in this state and other states, and modernize the bill. We then brought back a work draft, a very rough draft, to the committee in September. In which we held 2 days of work sessions, as you will remember, going over the very rough draft of the ideas which had been presented, making suggestions. We then took those back, redrafted the bill, and put together a rough finished bill for public hearings in October. There was a series of public hearings in October, actually I think it was 1 day, 2 days of hearings in October. And a number of people testified. The draft was released to the media so that they had an opportunity to review it, comment on it, consider it. The idea was to bring a bill back to the committee at the beginning of the session, which had already had substantial review by the public and by interested groups. And I think we've succeeded in that. We now have, we took the comments we received at the October meeting, the public hearing, the comments of the committee. We went back and fine-tuned the draft. We then went to Legislative Affairs and have worked with Legislative Affairs to bring the draft, our draft, into a form which was completely consistent with the other forms of draftsmanship. And I should say, just in passing, that Dick Bradley of Legislative Affairs was extremely helpful and worked very well with us in helping us get this bill up to its final shape. And that's what we have now. We have a bill that will be on your desk Monday morning, which will be a completed bill ready for introduction. It is basically the one you have now. I think it's been already, the changes have been incorporated. I think that's the bill that they have worked drafts now. The ones that you read. Okay. Now, I want to just briefly go through with you some of the key points of the bill, because there has been no formal committee action on any of them, and I want to alert you to the fact that you're going to have to make these decisions. Some of them are decisions which you have, I think, implicitly made already in terms of dates of reporting, things like that. But then there are some very major policy decisions which you have not formally voted on, and one area that you have not even discussed, either at the September or the October meetings, and needs to be discussed on Monday before you reach a final resolution. Okay, and that bill, that incidentally is the penalty section of the bill. But passing that for a moment, let me just focus on the major key points of the bill. And I'm going to just hit the highlights here, because the smaller things, the reorganizations, things like that, have already been, I think, massaged at it tonight. And they're all explained in the section-by-section analysis that you have, if anyone has any questions about them. And we're here to answer them.
Mr. Chairman, where's the section-by-section?
Don't you have? You should have.
It was prepared for the October public hearing.
But it is not in these packets.
It's not in our packet. Probably not in today's packet. One of the things that we haven't done, because we wanted to wait and see where things were going, is to conform the sectional analysis to the Legislative Affairs Work Draft. I think it's fairly close. We have not made any really major changes. There are some technical changes that have been
made. That would be forthcoming.
For the basic questions and issues, the October 16th section by section analysis is still valid.
That will be forthcoming, and I'd also like to note the...
Excuse me, Mr. Gross.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to complete my sentence on that. I'd like to note the presence of Representative Collins, Representative Cato. Thank you.
Continue.
Excuse me. Thank you. It's hard to hear down there.
I think there are extra copies. Mr. Chairman, Carol here, probably just stepped out. Yeah, she's going to get them, because there are extra sections of the section-by-section analysis. We tried to explain every change we've made. The first, and as you probably remember, the most controversial change in this bill that we have proposed is to lift the limits on individual contributions. And I'll go back over these after I'm through, but let me just list them for the present. To lift the limit on individual contributions, to impose new limits for the first time, a $1,000 limit on gifts to political action committees, and to continue the limits on gifts by political action committees to candidates. We have reduced the number of reports that have to be filed. We have eliminated the report which is presently required 10 days after the campaign, or 10 days after the election, and we have, there was a gap of 3 days which existed between 10 days and 7 days before the election, during which certain contributions did not have to be reported. That gap has been closed. And finally, we have eliminated expense reports which presently have to be filed on the same basis as campaign donation reports. Now they are only filed at the close of the campaign or an annual basis as an audit tool. We have prohibited the use of campaign funds for anything but political purposes. We have required that surplus campaign funds may not be appropriated for personal use by a candidate, but must be devoted to the purpose for which they were given or other purposes. We have provided the campaign accounts must be closed when the candidate is sworn into office. And we have radically changed the penalty provisions. Presently, all the penalty provisions are under existing law. Everything, any violation of the act is a misdemeanor, knowing or unknowing. The only offense under the act that requires knowledge is knowingly accepting an improper campaign contribution. And everything else, it doesn't make any difference whether you do it inadvertently, inadvertently, or anything, it's still a misdemeanor. There were also large civil fines which would be imposed by the commission. I think in the Vico case, they're up around $70,000 for a series of offenses. We have broken the act right now into three basic categories. One is deliberate violations of what we deem the, quote, important sections of law, which is, for instance, knowingly failing to report a large contribution prior to the election, or knowingly failing to file a report prior to the election. And these are major type of violations of a certain size, like over $1,000. Those are filed right now under the Act. Excuse me. This is pursuant to the committee suggestion last spring. Those are Class B felonies. Deliberate violations of the Act involving lesser sums or provisions which are not so significant, for instance, filing after the date of the election, where it's not information that the voters would have had prior to the election, are Class A misdemeanors. And finally, inadvertent violations of the Act are designated as violations, not something comparable to traffic tickets, and the fines are strictly limited in the amount that can be imposed for violations of fines in the aggregate. In other words, you can't have these situations where fines continue to build up year after year after year and for multitudes of offenses in thousands of dollars. They're strictly limited. Now, there are other changes which are outlined in the Act, but as I say, they're primarily minor, and they've been gone over by the committee and I think already massaged in some depth, and if you want to get the full scope of them, I suggest you review the section by section analysis. The two major decisions I think that you're going to have to make on Monday, excuse me, that have been controversial to now. One of them is controversial, which is the limits on individual contributions. And the second one is the penalty provisions, which have not yet been discussed. Let me start with the penalty provisions. As I said, we have divided this into three categories. The Commission's initial suggestion was felonies for the most serious crimes, misdemeanors for the next serious crimes, and violations for the inadvertent act. You have many options as you consider this. Just to give you an idea of, you know, what you're talking about here, if you want to talk about Class C felonies, you're talking about crimes which have imprisonment up to 5 years and fines up to $50,000. If you want to talk about a Class A misdemeanor, you're talking about imprisonment of not more than 1 year and a fine of not more than $5,000. And finally, a Class B misdemeanor, which this does not involve yet, involves imprisonment not more than 90 days and a fine of not more than $1,000. Now, I'll give you just an idea of the kinds of things which are classified as these kinds of crimes under our existing law. For instance, perjury is a Class B felony, right? That's a more significant felony than a Class C felony. Bribery is a Class B felony, and I'm picking public crimes here, the type of things that affect public administration. Receiving unlawful gifts by a public figure, not as a result of a bribe, but just somebody comes in and gives you a new car, when you have no right to receive it, you know, part of your salary, is a Class A misdemeanor. swearing falsely on a state form to receive welfare benefits is a Class A misdemeanor. This is an unsworn form. You don't have to, you know, swear to it, but nonetheless, it's a form that's given to you to fill out, and you deliberately make a misleading statement to get a state benefit. That's a Class A misdemeanor. Malicious mischief involving more than $500 worth of property is a Class C felony. Burglary is a Class C felony. Okay. This is just to give you kind of a panoply of the kinds of things that are designated under the existing criminal law. Now, I suggest you have several options to do. One is you could leave it as is, which is that certain serious crimes are Class C felonies, certain serious violations of the law are Class C felonies, certain slightly less serious violations are Class A misdemeanors, and then violations. You could, on the other hand, lower the scale entirely, one notch. You could say that the most serious offenses under the Act are Class A misdemeanors, the less serious offenses are Class B misdemeanors, and the final are violations. Or you could turn around and say, all right, we want to keep the felony misdemeanor distinction, but we're going to make it more serious than it is now. For instance, right now we say if you deliberately hide a campaign contribution, say before the election, of $1,000 or more, that's a Class C felony, whereas if it's $1,000 or less, it's a misdemeanor. You could say $5,000 or more. I mean, you could limit the area to which you're going to apply felony penalties more. This is an area which has simply not been discussed. And as I say, right now, everything under the Act, deliberate, non-deliberate, any amount of money, all provisions is a misdemeanor. And I don't think it's designated Class A or Class B, an undesignated misdemeanor. And as I say, this has just simply been something the committee has never gotten to and has to resolve. The provisions that are in there now were suggested by the committee last spring, but in a very informal way. So, and I think everybody wanted to see them down on paper. Now there's something to talk about, and I think that should occupy a substantial amount of time by the committee on Monday. The other thing that the committee has talked about a great deal, but has not yet resolved in a formal way, is what it's going to do about the campaign limits by individuals. Right now, there's a $1,000 limit on campaign contributions by individuals to candidates. And as the committee has heard me say many, many times, perhaps the keystone of this bill, so far as we're concerned, is trying to lift the limits off individual contributions. And the reasons that I have given are twofold. One is that we are trying to promote disclosure of what is really given in Alaskan political campaigns, by an honest reflection of the fact that there are multitudes of ways to give now, all of which are hidden, and that we wanted to favor at least a direct and honest disclosure of what is given in campaigns, at least promote it. And the second thing was to limit the growth of political action committees. It's because right now the major vehicle for getting around the campaign limits is the formation of political action committees, primarily on a national level. That's not an ill that we have seen yet develop in the state of Alaska, but we are starting to see it. And it is developing in the state of Washington, all around us. The state of Washington, for instance, just learned a few months ago, 48% of all money that was given in state campaigns last year was given by political action committees. And so you're starting to sense, you know, what can happen around us when you put on individual limits. And there's no limit on the amount of political action committees you can form. If I want to help Mike Miller, I can form Citizens for Mike Miller. I can form Juno Citizens for Mike Miller. I can form, you know, past old residents of Juno for Mike Miller. Exactly. But not if somebody was running against you, it sounds so terrific.
Don't give any more ideas.
Now, I want to add just one other thought to the things I have said to the committee, because it's come up since the committee meeting. There's another reason, I think, why why lifting the limits off individual contributions makes sense. And it's demonstrated by what's happened in the APOC this year. There have been two major cases in front of the APOC this year. And there have been a whole host of regulations that have come out of the APOC this year. I don't know whether anybody has had the opportunity to review them. We have. At one point, in fact, Susan and I have discussed with asked the APOC deliberately, please, to hold off some of the regulations they were adopting, because in our view, they were extremely close to violating First Amendment rights. There's a whole bunch of problems with them. But they all stem from the same problem, and that is that when you impose a limit of $1,000 on contributions, the mechanisms that people will develop to get around those limits are infinite and complex. Now, for instance, you have a situation with Vico, and you have a situation with a recent case that was decided by the APOC concerning Mr. McConkie. An enormous amount of money has been spent by the state on these cases. In Vico, the question is, was individual contributions by employees, you know, did they have to register as a group or didn't they have to register as a group? That's the basic issue of Vico. The reason that was done, of course, was because Vico itself was prohibited from giving unlimited amounts of money. So it tried to develop sources of money from among its employees. I mean, it wasn't any secret what was being done. I mean, it was, I think, quite clear. And the question is, did that violate the law? In the case of Mr. McConkie, there was a question of whether or not money was spent to assist a candidate, whether that money was truly an independent expenditure, you know, when it was done by the campaign consultant, or whether it wasn't. If it wasn't, it was a contribution. If it was an independent expenditure, it was not a contribution. These kinds of things have occupied the commission throughout this year and has cost a great deal of money. And you know, I don't know what's eventually going to happen with Vico. It troubles me that any person that basically has their activities out in the open is facing a $70,000 fine, whatever they've done. And as far as McConkie is concerned, that was resolved last week with, you know, according to the paper anyway, McConkie being held blameless. The series of regulations which the commission has proposed has tried to deal with problems like employers bringing people to their company to say, you know, we ought to support Bill Ray and Tim Kelly. They support the kind of things we're interested in, and making, you know, making those candidates available to employees, to, you know, so they can solicit the employees. The commission plans to bar this type of activity or to classify it as a contribution of the employer's time and the employee's time, which effectively, with $1,000 limits, prohibits the practice. Now, I mean, if you take a company, I mean, I saw the letter, I saw it raised in the context of DECO, which had written to the commission and asked for an interpretation, right? And if you took the president of DECO and all the DECO employees and you brought a candidate in to see them, I mean, 1 hour of company time or 15 minutes of company time, I'm sure is worth, you know, $1,000. And so as a practical matter, there is no way, if you have contribution limits of $1,000, that employers can do this, or labor unions can do this, or any, I mean, I'm not picking on employers, any organization that pays employees, well, I suppose that's an employer, but there are good employers and bad employers. What I'm trying to suggest is that the effort to enforce the $1,000 limit is resulting in enormous complexities of time, effort, and money. And as a practical matter, it's not gaining anything. I stress once again that Alaska is in the minority of states when it attempts to oppose limits. It is that the substantial majority of states have no limits on the amounts individuals may contribute to campaigns. This is not a radical suggestion I'm making. I'm suggesting that you join the mainstream. And I think the reason that other states do not have limits is because of the very things we're talking about. They don't work. Now, I'm not suggesting that because people are criminals, you legitimize their conduct. The kind of things that I'm talking about that get around the law are perfectly legitimate and legal. They're just hypocritical. They don't disclose to the public where the money is really coming from. And if you want to at least preserve the disclosure aspect of the bill, you know, I think the best thing you can do is to lift the individual limits on contributions. And as I say, it also gains other things. But so be it. If you want, you know, to get in, I think it would be helpful if the commission had an opportunity to look at some of the regulations the APOC is trying to adopt, because you will get a feeling for how, you know, incredibly complex this is becoming. I mean, every campaign is going to need a lawyer from now on to tell them when they are violating APOC requirements, because it is incredibly complex. I mean, Susan and I spent hours with the regulations trying to understand them, you know, and as I said, they come extremely close to the First Amendment line, and in some cases may pass over. But, you know, that leaves you the option of going to court, you know, to seek an injunction against the operation of the regulations of the commission, which, you know, I wouldn't recommend to anybody. I mean, this is the place to resolve that, not in court. So, and as I say, the best vehicle I know to resolve it is in the campaign limits, because that's where the whole focus is becoming. Okay, with that outline, those are the two major issues I think you're going to have to resolve on Monday. There may be some other issues that committee members have kept in mind that they want to, you know, bring up at that time too, but they are all discussed in the section-by-section analysis that you have available for you.
I would like the committee to note also that you wrote that letter to APOC regarding the new regulations proposed upon my advice from counsel, and I also wrote a letter to them asking them to hold off on those regulations. Since then we've had a chance to go over them, and there are many, many problems with them, but they continue to do it, and I don't know how to get them to at least hold off. Perhaps they will, perhaps they won't. I do have...
What is the status of the...
Say what?
What's the status of the regulations? I thought they went into force.
I think they have gone
January
into force 4th. Already.
January
4th. Now, Senator Kelly had his name on the list here. Senator Kelly, did you want to say something?
I'll wait.
Senator Fisher? I've never heard that before, but Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, we've heard once more a very eloquent statement from Hap Gross about removing the individual contributions limit. As before, I am totally opposed to that, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure Mr. Gross is very sincere in everything he says. I think it misses the basic point that those who want to hide expenditure, hide contributions will still hide contributions. Excessive contributions will fly in the face of candidates in the public's eye, so there will be still all sorts of subterfuges. Mr. Chairman, just because there have been questions and abuses and APOC has come up with screwy regulations and I have problems with many of the things they put in, I think that's totally irrelevant to the issue of the contribution limit. I think that has very often much more to do with the source of contributions, where people are trying, even under the existing situation, not show that they're contributing, where they're trying to avoid the disclosure of names even over $100, so that I don't think the total limit is at stake. It seems to me there's a basic principle involved, and that is that no candidate should be bought, there should be no perception of anybody being bought. So far as I'm concerned, Mr. Chairman, the $1,000 limit is very appropriate. Mr. Chairman, I would go a step further, that if we go beyond $1,000, or even if we stay with $1,000, I would suggest that we give further consideration to prohibiting any contributions by corporations and unions. Matter of Vico cited here, and the same thing applies to unions and others. The real questionable sources of money, PACs are an appropriate vehicle. At the federal level, there is no permission for corporations to provide direct contributions. And this is not a matter of who gets money from whom. There are as many corporations who are very generous on the Democratic side, and maybe more so than on the Republican side. The business of the majority of states joining mainstream, Mr. Chairman, that is totally, totally, totally irrelevant. Alaska has a constitutional provision for the right of privacy. It's very important. It was adopted by the people of Alaska as an amendment. It's very important. Very, very few states have that. Does that mean we should repeal it just to join the mainstream of states that don't have it? Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor this, but I'm unalterably opposed to removing the limit. I think that I don't think public support supports it, and I don't think it makes any sense.
Senator Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't we have kind of a built-in dichotomy here when we have $100 limitation on cash, but an unlimited contribution scheme?
Well,
doesn't that kind of work in reverse to us in a way? I don't understand that too well.
As I understand it, Senator Ray, the cash is not, the limit on cash has nothing to do with the total amount that you can give anybody. It's strictly a means of trying. Well, I see what you're saying. If you're saying that if people want to get around this, they can just give somebody a wad of cash, and there's no way to check it, that's true.
But then it says that you can't give an excess of $100 in cash.
Yeah.
But then it says you can have unlimited donation. So how do you check it? In other words, in order to give unlimited, you must make a check?
Because
who
there's
cares
a record.
If there
because there's
any
a record. Because there's
why?
A record. Because
it's a record to who? Who is the record? If it's in my private bank account, I have a record to tell me what I've spent?
No, the public. If you give a check, there is a record of it if your campaign is audited. And if somebody has to disclose that he's received, say, $5,000 from you. If you give cash and one person claims it's $100, the other person claims it's $50, and in fact it's $5,000, there's no trail by which people can ever check it. I mean, then you're basically relying totally on the good faith of the people involved. And that may be a plausible argument, but that's not true.
If you give me a check made out to cash for $5,000, what is that?
I think that would be a check. I think that would be a check.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because there'd still be a paper trail of it. I mean, I think
where
what you're trying to stop.
If I went down and cashed it at the bank,
what,
the
$5,000
check
would be endorsed on
the back.
Your signature would be endorsed on
my
the
personal
back.
Signature?
Yeah. Yeah. Or your campaign.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, it shows where the money went, where the money came from, and where the money went, and the amount of the money. It's simply an audit.
But there is no record of it, really.
Sure there is. The bank keeps copies of the checks, and if you're being audited and there's a question about it, it's really for the protection of the candidates and the campaigns. If someone comes to the APOC and says, I want you to know that Bill Ray got an illegal $5,000 contribution from X, you go to your bank records and you say, not so, here's the check from X, and it's for $500, and that's all. And it's a way of proving what happened. It may not be the perfect way of proving what happened, but it's better than nothing. And the idea is to encourage campaign contributions in a form that can be traced, imperfectly, I grant you, but traced better than giving wads of cash. That's the idea behind it.
Any, Mr. Miller, Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Miller?
I just wanted to sort of reiterate a point I made about a year ago on this, that I continue to be real skeptical on the removing the limit for this reason, and I think Senator Fisher touched on it. The hiding of the amount is only part of the problem. It's the hiding of the contribution, I think, is as great or more the problem. And just removing the limit, I don't think, solves the problem. But if somebody wants to hide the fact that they're contributing, they'll still revert to these complex and devious means. And if taking off the limit solved that problem, I might be tempted to take off the limit. But I guess I'm still skeptical. $1,000 is an awful lot of money. And when you take the limit off of that and say you can, without any limit, give even more than that, maybe just because nobody ever offers me more than $1,000, I don't know. But I just wonder what the contributor is getting for his $5,000 or $10,000 contribution. And I wonder what the public perceives that the legislator is getting for a personal contribution of $5,000 or $10,000. And I really continue to have problems both with the amount, the over $1,000, and the fact that that just taking the limit off, I don't think will solve the other problem of people wanting to hide the fact that they contributed.
It appears
only impacting the health, I'll grant you that.
Well, it would appear to me that if we're focusing on the disclosure, so that we have total disclosure, then the amounts really don't make the difference because of one reason. If this car company down here gives you $20,000 in your campaign and it's disclosed, the public is going to know, the press will damn sure know, that this organization gave you $20,000. That isn't going to look too good for you. Whereas now they could do it in a series of $1,000 here and there, and that's part of the problem that we've got in trying to do it. If our main purpose is disclosure, which I believe that's the way we should be going, rather than the amounts. Now, if we don't do that, we're back into the same situation that we are today with all of the court cases about who gave what to who, because there wasn't that disclosure. And I believe, in my personal opinion, at this stage of the game, that taking the limits off and putting in solid disclosure laws, and if you don't disclose it, now you're in real trouble. That's deliberate. But it shows the public that this company gave you $20,000 and an affiliate of theirs, if you will, gave you another $20,000. They're going to say right now, boy, that Miller sure got bought by that outfit. And you may not get elected because of that. Mr. Gross.
Well, just in brief response, Mr. Miller. The situation you pose where there's some, mafia chieftain who wants to keep the fact that he gave money to, someone's campaign secret isn't going to be dealt with in this type of situation. There are still ways to get around disclosing. There's no question about that. But the vast majority of cases are not people who are deliberately trying to avoid disclosing. They're people who simply want to give more money. Right? And, perfectly legitimately. Relatives of yours. You've never been in the kind of, you've never been in a statewide race, and you've never, to my knowledge, really been in a serious contestant race. Now, maybe it seemed like it to you, but it never seemed like it to me.
That's not a point of discussion.
But the point I'm getting at is, in Anchorage, for instance, where large amounts of money are being spent in campaigns, in statewide campaigns, which you've certainly been around, there are people who want to give, say, $5,000 or $4,000. Not because they're sinister or evil or anything. They simply want to give that amount of money in a campaign. And not many, but there are some. And right now, there are ways for them to give it. And the public only learns that they gave one, and then the other four trickles in from different directions. And in my view, from what I know of campaigns and what I've seen in the APOC records and the like, that's, 90% of what you're talking about. Is there going to be some evil, sinister people who slink around behind and still want to, designate their campaign disclosure, that don't want to tell you they gave money? Sure. There'll be people who give money under the table, too. They can't stop that. But for the vast majority of people who want to be honest, you know, who are trying to follow the law. I think the law ought to at least follow, you know, a reasonable conduct of behavior for them. You know, it's very interesting. I'll tell you what's happening. From what I'm told, now, maybe the rest of you have a different experience. I've talked to some fundraisers this year who are trying to raise money for some of the statewide campaigns. And I'm told, and you can verify this, that money in campaigns is simply drying up. I mean, that what's starting to happen now is that, you know, aside from our general economy, which is, I'm sure, having some impact, that people are just getting nervous. I mean, you know, it's so complex. They don't want to read their name on the front page of the paper. You know, they don't want to deal with all these complexities or get possibly face criminal prosecution. And somebody says to them, you know, do it this way, do it that way, do it this way. You know, the law ought to be as simple, and it seems to me it ought to reflect as much as possible what human beings normally do, you know, as possible.
Unless there is something inherently
wrong with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with spending money in campaigns. It's a constitutional right. You know, and if anything, it favors challengers, not incumbents. So it's nothing that you're doing to try and lock yourselves in. If anything, you're trying to encourage people to stimulate political debate. The question is, do people know where the money comes from, not whether it comes?
Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up on the previous exchange, and it relates to what Mr. Gross said. If I were in Representative Miller's shoes and some car dealer offered me $20,000, that would give the appearance of being bought, I would go back to this guy and say, listen, friend, I really appreciate it. However, the public would never understand that you're doing this for strictly public purpose because you believe in good government and I am good government. I'd go give him back his $20,000 check and say, you know, I wouldn't even say it, but the implication would be, you know, give me a $1,000 check or whatever a contribution limit is, and then if that person happens to find some other way, he would do it. Miller would get the money, and it would all look very clean, and nobody would be suspicious about this particular contribution. Mr. Chairman, the other major factor, I think, is that while money may be getting tight, one reason is the economy, as Mr. Gross said. The other one is that we're getting a heck of a lot of candidates running for statewide office as well as for local office. And eliminating the ceiling or even raising it will simply escalate the cost. The amount of money going into campaigns, you know, just have the effect of setting new standards. Maybe 20,000 would not be acceptable, but maybe it would be acceptable to receive 5,000 without getting suspicious. So all my corporate union friends would start dishing out $5,000 checks, and wham, instead of having $80,000 or $150,000 campaigns for Senate, we suddenly have $400,000 campaigns. And it just seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that one of our purposes ought to be to hold the total cost down.
I would intend to agree with you if you could go to all the television stations, radio stations, newspapers, printers, and tell them to reduce their cost by 50%. And you look at the rates again this year, and you're going to see those rates have gone up. So we can't. We can't cut down the cost of expenditures unless those people out there help us do it. I just don't think it's within the realm of possibility. Representative Hurley?
Well, I was going to. My comment was Senator Fisher just ended up with saying, and that I thought that one of our goals was really to try to lower the cost of campaigns. And I don't believe that they would raise their rates if they knew that there wasn't going to be the money out there to get people to pay those. And since we can't constitutionally set limits on campaigns, I think that we ought to be looking at what's going to make it possible for more people to run, because incumbents have an advantage, and those people who are trying for the first time are at a disadvantage. And I think that what we should be about is to make it possible for the average person to try for public office, not those who have a lot of money and those have access to a lot of money. And that's all I want to say. Thanks.
Well, I can. No, I'm not going to do anything there. I'm going to keep quiet. Senator Ray?
Yeah, I've got a hypothetical question. Prod or Spear or any of these, whatever they call themselves, the political action group, say of state employees, APA, They collect from their individual membership checks in the amount of $100 in the aggregate, $20,000. How does that appear?
It appears as individual contributions to a political action committee. Political action committee is then limited to $1,000 contribution.
But it doesn't say that on it. It says Ray for a Senate.
Oh, if it's
on
given.
The checks.
If
but they are going to their membership and say this is the choice that this is our political candidate, and we want you to make $100 contributions, not more than $100, and they collect $20,000 and hand it over to me.
No problem.
There's no record contribution.
Oh yes, there is. There's a check.
By who?
There's a check.
Individual checks come to me.
Yeah.
You have to report the names of the individuals on the checks to the APOC.
If it's less than $100.
No. No.
That's what I'm saying.
But you have. Well,
and they collect $10,000 for me and just hand it over.
The person who collects it is not making a contribution to you. The person who makes the checks out to you are making the contribution
yes.
to you. And you report them just as if they're giving it to you directly.
So what there's
that is correct. What you couldn't do is if the PAC went out and said, can we have $100? You know, we're going to give it to candidates that help APEA, then they
and
take
we'll
the money and they decide.
But if they take it,
that's
what I'm saying is they can collect it and say, this is our candidate, and they can collect $10,000 and $100 contributions, turn it over to me, there's no record of it.
Are there any other questions?
There is a record.
Where?
In the campaign books. If you ever get audited, they don't have to report it to the APOC. If your campaign ever gets audited, you have to keep records of where you got your money. I mean, even if people give you $100 or less, you have to have a record of $100. You have to have a record of the contribution.
Well, I put down individual contributions, $10,000.
Yeah, but you also have to, I believe, a record.
You don't have to show individual names.
I think you do. Not to the APOC, but in your own campaign accounts.
Why? You have to keep them, but you don't have to keep them.
Exactly. Unless you get audited or something like that.
Even then you
got to. No, you don't have to disclose it.
Can't we?
There's a record of it.
What I'm suggesting in this is that there should be some effort that we could prohibit PACs from doing that instead of getting to this. Okay? That's what I'm suggesting.
Meeting that we're having on Monday, it's kind of a special meeting because we've got to get moving on this. We do have a campaign coming up, statewide and et cetera. The problem we have is that we don't have that much time to get it in and have them gear up for it if this is accepted by or passed into law. So I'm extremely anxious to get going on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tilley.
Mr. Chairman, past experience indicates to me that this bill, if it passes, will be one of the last bills out of the legislature this year. I think it's optimistic to think that this bill will take effect in this election this year. Virtually every bill that we have dealing with conflict of interest or campaigning or disclosure or APOC is always ends up at free conference committee. And it's so difficult to come to agreement that is normally one of the last pieces of legislation to pass. So I think on the outset going in, we might have better luck just giving up on the fact that we're going to be able to get quick passage on this bill so it could go into effect next year, and rather take the longer view and work on this bill as to going into effect following this election. Because it's simply not practical in my mind to expect this bill to go into effect for this particular election.
Well, I'm very optimistic, and I'm not one to give up and say that it can't be done. I say it can be done if the legislature and everyone else is interested in passing something instead of living and under the regime that we have to live in under now, under APOC. It needs to be changed. There are many things that need to be changed in it. Now, I'd go along with you on it, but I'm still going to try to pass it. And if I have any, if I were to take the same attitude on other ones, and I don't mean to be in conflict with you as Rules Chairman, believe me, I don't. I still have the hope that we can do something about it. Senator Ray?
Common ordinary people are going to read this and try to make some sense out of it. Well, You say here on page 15, we're getting into the cash again.
Of the bill?
Yeah. The bill, section 15, 14, 120, contributions by a person. Now, an ordinary man would sit down and read this, says a person may contribute any amount of money, goods, or services directly to a candidate. He says, well, that's fine, I can give my people. I got $1,000 cash I'm going to give. You can't give cash, but it already has a page that says you can't give this cash. I wonder if there's some way you could put a disclaimer in there to a person may contribute.
Subject to the provisions of 15, 14, 120.
Something like that. Could you do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cover that, and also in 150, 15, 14, 150. It's got another one about cash in there, too.
Oh, you can.
A political party can give any amount of cash?
Oh, I see. Sure, yeah, okay.
Just a couple of places there, and it's just so it protects so a guy don't get.
It's all in one place.
And then and there was another question I had. What's an initiative ordinance?
An initiative ordinance would be a local initiative, a municipal initiative.
Well, it's a little confusing to me. And
where are you?
Page one. It says, by a borough assembly, by ordinance, which you're talking about a borough ordinance, or by initiative ordinance. And I don't understand.
Wait a minute. Second.
It means an ordinance from adopted people. By initiative rather than by vote of the municipal assembly.
Well, it originates in the borough, isn't it? The people don't originate an ordinance.
Okay, which is submitted by the city council or borough assembly or
right.
By initiative ordinance.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah, and you got the same thing as on page two there, we got on a state or municipal initiative. Municipal initiative or referendum petition. Now, is it a municipal ordinance? We're talking about ordinance on the other page. Now we're talking about a municipal initiative. So we should be consistent one or the other.
Okay. Or municipal ordinance, initiative ordinance.
Whatever. Okay. I mean, okay, now in page five, line 28. Wouldn't it look better if we say a violation instead of a crime? We don't know if he committed a crime. Might be a violation. Page 5 of line 28 says, believe has probable cause to believe has committed a crime. Why don't we say a violation?
Come out and violated this chapter.
Well, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay, now in 7, on page 7, if a political interest group intends.
What line?
19. If a political interest group intends to support or oppose only one candidate or contribute to or expend more than 50% of its funds, well, a political interest group can only give how much? How much are we talking?
A political interest group can contribute $1,000, but it can spend unlimited amounts.
It can spend, but it can only contribute. I see, all right. Those are just a couple of things.
You're only up to page 8.
Yeah, I'm only up to page 8.
Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to bring the attention of the committee to the fact that this grant does make another, what I consider a very major change, and that is, I guess, starting at page 8, in line 21, increasing the reporting requirements of the names of contributors from $100 to $250. That to me is a very questionable change. But I just think everyone ought to be aware of that.
When we go through it section by section, we will have the opportunity to discuss that.
Yeah.
There
again, you have an argument between $250.
If you recall what we tried to do, we were to put down these things in this particular bill form. Nothing was set in concrete. It was an idea. And when we get to it, we can change it back, up, down, or throw it out. At least it's here in front of us to be able to read it in its context.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kelly.
Question to Mr. Gross. When was the $100 limit established, and when was the $1,000 limit established?
In 1974.
Now that's 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
$100
the 250,
is the same thing today as it was 11 years ago.
250 has been supported by the APSC for years.
And
they've been trying to get a raise for years.
Senator Ray, did you wish to say anything?
Well, I was agreeing that the $100 is different now than it was 1974. I haven't seen either one, but I mean, it doesn't what they tell me.
Incidentally, I would also bring to the
the attention of the committee that when we went through these, and as we read, as we went through this, the APOC was in attendance with us during all this time. So this is, we haven't got anything in here that I'm, that, that the APOC is not aware of. They helped us, with an exception of a couple of things. Mr. Gross, would you like to comment a little further on that, perhaps?
About the involvement of the APOC?
Yes.
Yeah, we took every draft to the APOC before, you know, we actually put it down on paper. We'd give them a rough and we'd work it over with them to find out primarily whether there were any, you know, administrative problems that we just hadn't thought of. And also, we worked with attorneys for the commission, Pat Kennedy, who was extremely helpful. Theta was extremely helpful. They spent a lot of time on this draft. I think that it's fair to say with, that with certain exceptions, like I don't think they agree with the spending, the contribution limitations provisions, but generally as they support the bill. I think that's a fair statement. I think Theta would say so. The letters that I've seen to the committee indicate that they consider it a major improvement over existing.
Yeah, there are some major policy issues on which the commission would disagree as we have them drafted in the bill. But as we worked through the various drafts with Theta and with the attorneys working with her, there became fewer and fewer technical problems. And we ended up with a few technical differences of opinion and these two or three major policy differences, which is a lot of progress in the course of the year.
Thank you, Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to back you up and make it very specific that it wasn't just Theta and the APOC attorney, but Theta submitted the drafts to the commission itself. It wasn't just the APOC staff, but the commission reviewed the bill, and the commission essentially endorsed most of the provisions.
That's right.
I just wanted to set the tenor so that those in the audience and the press will know that this isn't something that the legislature has done all by themselves.
Well,
Mr. Gross.
Appropriate to what Senator Kelly mentioned earlier about the difficulties in putting a bill through like this. I think that, you know, our whole effort, I think it's difficult to take a bill of this size and put it through in one session, period. And I think what we have tried to do is spend a great deal of time dealing with the bill with all the agencies that would normally be dealt with after the bill was introduced. And what we've tried to do is put together a bill, you know, dealing with members of the committee first, then going out to the agency, then going out to the public, you know, and trying to incorporate all the comments in the bill before it was introduced, rather than afterwards, for just that problem. And that's not to say, of course, that we have a joint House and Senate State Affairs Committee working on this bill now. I mean, the House has been here and participated, I think, in this whole thing, although we've been working strictly for the Senate Committee. And that was, I think, at Chairman Abood's suggestion that, you know, that if we were ever going to get this thing done, we would have to cooperate. And so I think it's had a little different kind of an approach than a lot of bills, and it's had a lot of public massaging already.
Excuse me a moment. I'm going to excuse the members of the House. They go in at 10 o'clock. Thank you very much for your attendance this morning. I'm sorry I kept you so long. Well, I'd hope to see you at the next meeting. And again, your members of the House are very welcome to come to our hearings at any time. You have a special invitation. Thanks again. Senator Ray. May we continue, please?
I just had one question. It's my understanding that Mr. Gross and Ms. Burke both are here to assist any members in whatever capacity they can. So I'd like to have Mr. Gross afterwards give me a list of the $4,000 contributors from Hank.
And the mafia chief.
And the mafia chief that you happen to know.
Well, I've given them several other Juneau residents who are interested in the bill, so.
Senator Kelly. Senator Kelly, did you have something?
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, the comment about APOC, we went through a similar process about 3 years ago, came up with a similar bill with the three conference committee. APOC agreed with everything except one provision. Went to the governor, they went to the governor and asked him to veto it. He vetoed the bill. So, you know, it's a little more difficult than it would appear to get a consensus on something like this. Well, I'm sure going to do my best to do it, but I'm not as optimistic that we can just sail it through because it doesn't affect much this election.
Well, perhaps we'll go back to the old children's rhyme, I can do, I can do, I can't choo-choo, I can do. Read the book, Senator, it might help.
Anyway, you send it over to the House when they get a hold of it.
Okay. Mr. Grove.
Senator Kelly, I should say, you know, our attitude with the APSC was that, you know, they are experts in such things as how the bill is administered, you know, all the problems that come up in reporting and one thing or another. They're no more qualified than anybody else in the state to tell you what campaign limits should be or they shouldn't be. Those are matters of public decision.
I thought one other one there was...
Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on page 29 of the bill section. Yes, of the bill. There's a section on removal from office. Is this an existing law?
That is exactly existing law.
Thank you.
Senator.
I just have another, just technical, on page 19. Line 25, well, start 24, it says, influence or attempt to influence the actions of the voters for or against the election of the candidate or the passage of a ballot proposition. It's a little weak there. It should say passage or defeat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Are there any further questions other than technical and spelling that we wish to take up at this particular sitting? If not, I thank you very much for your attendance, and I thank you much for attending. We are adjourned.